Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's You Better You Bet with Ken Barkley and Nick Ashew on BetQL.
Of course, don't forget you can stream us on Twitch, twitch.tv/BetQL, YouTube, the Odyssey app as well. Wrapping up the end of the college football season, look ahead to the early odds for next year. There is Heisman odds already out for Bet Rivers and, of course, the who wins the national championship next year as well. But the one of the crazy things, too, about this, Ken, was this season as a whole in college football. For most of the year, it kind of felt like Georgia and everybody else. And it was based a lot on Georgia's defense, right? I mean, that defense was historically dominant for a majority of the year until really you got to the SEC championship game and Alabama said, oh, no, we know how to beat you. And then obviously everything changed last night. But there was so much parity in college football. I mean, we have the conversation about the NFL and the parity that there's been this year where there's like five teams I could look at and say they could win a Super Bowl. Also, here's why they wouldn't win. In a lot of ways, it kind of felt like that in college football, except it was Georgia's by far the best because Alabama didn't feel like for most of the year as good as we've seen in the past. Alabama, they're good, obviously, clearly in the national championship game. But it was one of those seasons where we did end up getting the two best teams in the national championship, which is the most important thing. But then again, at the semifinals, you look around at both those games and go, they weren't really that eventful. They weren't really that fun. They were just kind of blowouts that you looked at and said, when do we get Georgia and Alabama in this thing?
Yeah, I totally agree. The predictability of the sport is something that you're speaking to. Also, one of the reasons I like this title game is it's kind of a satisfying ending. And college football does actually tend to give you that. The run-up to the ending can be brutal, to be honest, sometimes. Sometimes the conference championship games are garbage. The semifinals are more often than not garbage, honestly, because there's usually only like two good teams or one good team. The year that Joe Burrow LSU won, there was not a team that could sniff them in a game. And I mean, it was just, we were just waiting to end up, and we ended up crowning them in New Orleans at the Superdome. And I was the moron who bet Clemson plus six once I got to that point in that game. So like, but
you made up for it this year with Georgia. So you feel
like it's true. Yeah. I don't, it's funny reviewing my own success in college football title games. Actually, that's a really fun exercise. I'm going to do it right now because I have them all right here.
I come to inspire you with new ideas.
I think I've gotten more right than wrong by a lot, but there are some stinkers in here. And I'll be curious. I'll go through them because it's the title game. I'm going to guess you bet a lot of these games too. So, all right. So, so I had Georgia this year. Awesome. Last year I did not bet the spread in Alabama and Ohio State. That was the COVID year, obviously won by Alabama and Mac Jones and Devontae Smith, who tore apart Ohio State's defense. We had a lot of over and Alabama team total over because of people who had come on the show. I did not do as much college football research that year as I did before because it was a COVID season and I wasn't even sure the year was going to happen. So, but like, didn't lose it. 2019 is the biggest stinker. This is what I'm talking about. The LSU Clemson game, Joe Burrow and LSU, quite possibly the greatest college football team, at least of the last couple decades, maybe of all time. They beat Clemson and Trevor Lawrence. Did you have a bet on LSU and Clemson, Nick?
If I remember correctly, I think I was on LSU. See, I don't have a long
I wouldn't
record.
Blame you.
Yeah. Like you've got all of your spreadsheets. I've seen those. You're way more professional about it than me. I'm just like, I'm going to pick this and I'm going to click this button and here we go. Like,
I think you'd remember if you were on Clemson because you wouldn't feel good about it. I felt
that's
terrible.
The thing. Yeah. I'm 99% sure I was on LSU then. Yes.
Shout out to you. Then we have.
Yeah, it wasn't. Honestly, like you said, they're one of the best teams in college football we've seen in 20 years. It's not like I went out on a limb picking LSU in that game. So.
It's true. And I have them in sort of some of the metric that I use, which we can we'll go over maybe in the back half of this segment, too, about like the predictability of college football and if it's going to stay like that. 2018 was Clemson over Alabama big. That was obviously like Trevor Lawrence over Tua. That was that title game where pick six of Tua early in the game. Clemson kind of rolls them a little bit, basically, as ends up what's happening. Clemson was plus, six, seven in that game. That's actually one that I don't remember. I don't remember the spread off the top of my head. They were definitely and it was about a touchdown. Yeah. Well, Alabama Clemson played three times in the title game. The spread's been really close all three times.
And that's the thing. I'm kind of mushing them all together, I feel like, at
this
point.
Well, this is the only one that Trevor played in against Alabama.
Yes. So then that, yeah, then I would have probably still been on Alabama, I think, in that. Yeah, if I remember correctly, I was Alabama.
Okay, I think I was on Clemson in that game. I kind of remember where I was when I watched that game, too. I was very surprised at, like, the dramatic nature of the result. Like, Clemson really took it to them a lot of that game and obviously had some really impactful big plays that went their way. The year before was 2017. That's a very famous game in Atlanta. The first meeting between Georgia and Alabama in this recent rivalry in the title game. Obviously, Tua comes in to replace Jalen Hurts in overtime. It was a touchdown.
That was one of the most fun games I've ever watched other than, I mean, if you're talking about college football, maybe going back to the Vince Young, Reggie Bush national title game with Texas USC.
I had USC game. That's my other dud.
Did you?
Yeah. That was the first game. That was the first game I ever bet on for like any reasonable amount of money. Yep. I was I was home from vacation in college and I bet on a site that doesn't even exist anymore, I think. Or if it does, it's like a scam of some other site that bought it. Yeah. Right. I'm pretty sure USC was 7.5
right?
in the game.
The old days. Yeah.
old days. Inner tops. Oh, yeah. I think USC was 7.5 in that game. And we won't go all the way back to that. We'll only do the college football player affair, mostly because we don't have enough time. But Georgia Bama, I had a lot of money in Georgia futures that year because I had created this metric called talent score that we use on the show a lot. And that was the first year that I was running it forward. So I'd only looked backwards and I was so excited that I had created this thing. 2017 was the first year that I used it. Georgia was by far number one in this metric by a mile. And I was like, oh my God, like, is Georgia going to be really good? They played Notre Dame early in that season in a just brawl that they won, I think 20-19 or some kind of low scoring game. But that showed you it was Roquan Smith was on that team. He was obviously probably the best player on that defense. Yes. They play Alabama in the title game. Everybody knows the Tua play. Alabama, I believe, closed -3 in that game. And I believe I had everyone I talked to was like, Alabama money line, like, and if they go down, bet them again. Like, they were convinced that Alabama was going to win the game somehow. Not altogether unfamiliar to how people felt last night, I think, about how that game was going to go. I don't know how it's going to happen. It's just going to happen, and Alabama's going to win. That's how a lot of people felt about that 2017 game with Alabama and Georgia. Basically, Georgia having, if I just rank my teams of the college football playoff era, LSU of 2019 scores the highest. Georgia has the highest talent score by a mile of any team that's played in the playoff era. Like, that's how good that team was rated from a just player standpoint, just the players that were on the team, which is pretty wild. 2016 is the second of the two meeting. We can do them together. The Deshaun Watson Clemson teams versus Alabama. So 2015 is the sort of like close loss, basically. And then 2016 is the Renfro pick play to win the title with under a minute to go. And Hurts scored the touchdown right before that. So like two crazy games. People remember, if people who have followed me from the beginning on Twitter at Lockie Lockerson will remember, that's the first year that I was on Twitter. And if you go back and look through my tweets, I rose to popularity for a lot of different reasons. But one of them was that I got everything about that season right. Everything. I got who was good, right? I got who was going to make it. I got the Clemson, even though they lost in the middle of the year, I want to say to Wake Forest, or Pitt. I think it was Pitt, actually. And then they lost a terrible midseason game and their odds dropped to like 15-1 to win the title. And I'm like, Clemson's going to get a rematch with Alabama and they're going to win. And there's still a tweet of me, I think, on Twitter saying Clemson's going to get a rematch with Alabama and they're going to win. Like, that's what I think is going to happen. And it did. So that helps when your first year on Twitter, when you're trying to become like a popular gambling person, that you just absolutely
you made a strong impression. I did.
And the key is, and other Nick Costos taught me this. He just makes bold predictions all the time because even if you only hit like 1 out of 10, everybody remembers the one that you hit, and who cares about the other 9? I didn't even know that lesson at that point. That was
doing that. Well, see, he's a radio guy. We've learned that a long time ago. You just say how you feel, and if you're right, you get to brag about it forever. And if you're wrong, well, then you just make fun of yourself and you move on, and then people forget because more often than not, you're making predictions, you're going to be wrong. So, except for you, clearly, because you know it's all written in there. So
that's right.
It's all documented on Twitter.
Right. So 15-16, the transition from Watson to Lawrence and the Clemson-Alabama double into Georgia-Alabama, obviously. Then 2014 is the first year of the college football playoff. And that was when everybody was like, really, what's this new thing? This is going to be really exciting. I remember I was in the Caribbean watching an SD version of both semifinal games, which was Oregon and Mariota played Jameis and Florida State.
There's
the
a balance there, though, right? It's like you're in the Caribbean, but also it's standard def. So,
And it was the first year dating my girlfriend, who's now my wife. I was on vacation with her family for the first time, and I was like all in on these games, and everyone else was like not as interested. So they're like having a party basically while Florida State Oregon's going on. Oregon smashing them. Florida State had won the title the year before with Jameis, obviously, when he burst on the scene. They beat Alabama, but this was like the return, and they were still very rated really highly. Jimbo was still the coach, so they played Oregon in the first semifinal. I'm like glued to the television. There's 30 other people in the house. Nobody cares. And I'm like trying to pay attention to what's happening because I'm like so into it. I had bet Florida State. They got smoked in the game. Terrible bet by me. And then the nightcap, it's crazy that the playoffs started, like the first year that there were semifinals, started with Alabama getting smoked by a team. Like, think about all that Alabama's done in the college football playoff era in this short amount of time. And the college football playoff era starts with them getting dump trucked, railroaded, run off the field by Ohio State, who like I watched every play of the game, and I, you know, you can be like, no, if this play turns, Alabama's actually like Ohio State dump trucked them. Like, that's what happened.
That's a great example. That's a great example of, I always say that we forget the failures of greats. And that's a perfect example that nobody remembers that. Nobody remembers Michael Jordan's failures and bad games in the playoffs. There weren't a lot, but they do exist. You can go back and look. Nobody remembers Alabama losing that game, getting smoked, getting dump truck, getting railroaded. All of the words you use, we can add a whole bunch more. None of that is remembered because Alabama's been so good for so long. But I find it fascinating that you were brave enough when you were on a vacation with your then girlfriend, now wife, in the Caribbean, and this is early on, and you're willing to sit and watch this game while everybody else is doing other things.
I had a bet on the game.
you were the cliche boyfriend at that point. Sure. That's not being social. That's just hanging out, watching the game. Well, he's like, I got money on this thing, man. I got to pay attention to this.
Right. Nobody remembers. So, yeah, I mean, what was the term that you used? Nobody remembers the failures of grace or whatever it is. What was
no
that
one
term
remembers
used?
The failures of grace. I don't know if that's a quote. That's just what I
mean.
Say,
that's got to
so
be
sure
from
something.
Yeah,
similar.
That's got to be like Teddy Roosevelt or something, right? That's got to be something crazy. So, yeah, Alabama,
Damn,
Ohio State.
I feel like I just made that up. Maybe it wasn't Teddy Roosevelt. Maybe
I mean,
if
you're the first one that's on that, I mean, you gotta copyright that with Clemson.
All right, well,
nobody remembers.
Scott Lynn, if we can get that copyrighted now, please, before we move on, that would be great. I'm now going to take full credit for that quote. Thank you.
The two most dominant teams during the playoff era, Alabama and Clemson. So yeah, maybe people don't remember Alabama, Ohio State. People, I mean, they will, because we'll talk about it right now. But I mentioned Deshaun Watson and Trevor Lawrence. Even I brain farted on the Kelly Bryant year, which was terrible, and they made it anyway. They played Alabama in one of the worst semifinals I've ever watched. They had a 0.0% chance of scoring points against that Alabama defense with Kelly Bryant as the quarterback. So, like you obviously dwell on the great times and the championships, but maybe when the team makes the playoff every single time, you sort of forget about the one version of the team that maybe wasn't quite as good, maybe made it, and you were like, oh my god, Clemson, what are we doing in this game? So yeah, that was, I mean, I, and then Oregon, Ohio State is the Caribbean. I was watching the semis. That's the continuation of that story. Ohio State was a, I don't know if people remember this. It is a laughable point spread in retrospect. I had a lot of money on Ohio State in the game. They were a dog to Oregon in the national title game. They were like 3, I think, actually. I had plus money. I think it was 125 or 130. Not even close. By far the best team in the game. By far the best team that made the playoff because of how they were playing. A lot of that was predicated on, I guess, the performance of the teams up to that point, which counts Ohio State losing earlier, changing quarterbacks. Oregon had the Heisman Trophy winner. That's part of it. But, oh, man, it's... You dream about betting opportunities like Ohio State as a dog in that game. Oh, Georgia last night, not even in the zip code as a betting opportunity of Ohio State as a dog in that game in 2014. So yeah, I'm really glad you brought that up. That was a really fun. You maybe didn't enjoy it nearly as much as I did. I really enjoyed thinking through all those games.
I just find it fascinating. Really, I mean, the thing that stood out to me the most was the Caribbean story. I mean, that's such a look into your life and who you are. Your priorities are clearly in line there. You're like, listen, this relationship's great, but if I got to pick one or the other, I got something right on this game, so I need to be able to watch this. So I guess it worked out. You know, they realize who you were and everything's cool. So at least
my relationship's riding on something, but Florida State's plus points at the Rose Bowl, and we might have to watch that. I'm just going to let you know. I'm just going to let you know that that might be a thing. So that's probably – so of all those of that era, the worst bet I ever made, it's got to be Clemson against LSU with Burrow. It has to be.
Hey, listen, and I have
Jameis Oregon is in the – I mean, it was over early. I mean, it was over. Like, no chance. I believe he got fumble sixth. Like maybe in the second quarter of that game. And it was like, oh God, like, I don't even know if I want to watch this anymore. I think it's Burrow LSU. I bet against them with Clemson. I think that's the worst bet I've made in the college football playoff era.
You're far more professional than me to remember everything. You've got spreadsheets and you've got a record. Oh,
it's so much fun. All I have is the years. I don't even have what I bet in the game. I have the year because this is just the talent score sheet that I have up. So I have the year, who made the playoff, who made the final and who was the champ, some metrics and stuff, but I don't have like what I bet. I don't have the point spread. This is all, it's all just D-Gen memories. That's a new segment. New segment we're debuting on the show. That time, Ken bet D-Gen Clemson memories. Plus points against the greatest college football team in history playing at
he
their
can't
place,
remember. He can't remember what he had for breakfast or what he wore yesterday, but he can remember
cereal
the spread and
something?
Every champion
maybe?
He's bet on. D-Gen memories.
I don't know what I think I had an English muffin, maybe. But it's usually just picking off whatever my kids ate. I'm usually just picking off the plate. It's usually
honestly, that's pretty good. Well, we're going to look ahead next. We've got the odds for who will win the national championship next year in college football. And who could be your Heisman Trophy winner? Bryce Young, does he win back-to-back? Do you bet or you bet on BetQL?
It's You Better You Bet with Ken Barkley and Nick Ashew on BetQL.
It's never too early to look ahead of the next college football season if you want to look at who could win the national championship, who could win the Heisman. The odds are out thanks to our friends at Bet Rivers. He's Ken Barkley. I'm Nick Ashew. In for Nick Costos. You better you bet. Of course, you can get with us at Lockie Lockerson on Twitter, at Nick Ashew. For me on Twitter, no real surprise. Do you want to start with the Heisman or do you want to start with national championship?
Can I do a little bit on champion, but let me just do a little bit on this past year that just ended and like how we can carry this forward, if that's okay with you. Just you got me on that journey last segment of
I forgot we did bet. Kind of go down the rabbit hole of all the past champions you picked. So have at it. I know you have final thoughts on this college football.
Absolutely. Just a couple. This I promise this won't belabor the point. But for people who and I'm prone to belaboring, that's one of the things that I do. Preview series that we did before the season started for college football, which hopefully a lot of people liked. Win totals did very well in it. Analysis, I think, was pretty sound based on what ended up happening this season. There's like an underlying metric that guides some of the macro decisions in college football, and it's I created it. That makes it sound like it's a new invention or something radical. It's not. It just combines two statistics that we use in college football all the time to evaluate how good the players are at a team, recruiting and returning production, and that you basically compile them and you make a score and you rank teams. And that kind of helps guide some of your big picture decision making. It's worth noting that, as you would imagine, if we have a final of Alabama and Georgia, a metric that evaluates talent is probably going to say that these were two worthy teams to go to the final and that the champion was very worthy. Georgia had the second highest talent score coming into the year. Alabama was eighth. And again, that ignores coach and quarterback and all of the other things that make Alabama, Alabama, or Georgia, Georgia, I guess you could say with Kirby Smart. But just Michigan, who made the semifinal, was ninth. So three of this kind of nine programs, and but each of them very high up in their conference. So talent score sort of doing its job in terms of telling you the teams that really can win the national title, identifying Michigan, which not a lot of people were in on, and you know, Georgia and Alabama, I think everyone was pretty much in on. So not really a lot of surprises there, but in the entire college football era, college football playoff era, I should say, talent score has yet to be flummoxed by even a team that's made the final. Even Cincinnati would probably be the closest team, just because I don't use group of fives to make this list, to make this ranking. So if we try to spin that forward, Nick, to this season, we can read the odds in a second. I think the interesting thing for me going forward, I know a lot of people that listen to the show really like the college football stuff and like the metric analysis and everything. The thing that will be very interesting going forward in college football, there'll be two things that are extremely interesting. The name, image, likeness rules being changed, allowing teams to essentially like pay players above board, like all on the record documented, I think is going to end up actually making this list easier to compile recruiting wise. I think it's actually going to draw more to the better teams with more money. Texas A&M has basically already got like a conglomerate corporation going that's paying players. It's one of the reasons why they're going to have the best recruiting class this year. So it's sort of the haves are going to have more. probably because they're going to be able to pay more. That seems like, which is already what we had anyway. It's just above board, and now it's all kind of on the record. And maybe a couple other schools like A&M enter the conversation more often for having the best recruiting classes. So that's the recruiting part of it. It doesn't seem like we're still going to be able to measure it and document it. It just might end up being like, you mentioned the SEC is going to be good for a really long time. Well, one of the reasons is because A&M is basically becoming like Amazon for paying college football players to come play there. The second thing that'll be really interesting going forward, that'll be really tough to measure, is the transfer portal. And we'll probably get into that a little bit when we do these odds coming up, because there are a number of very impactful players, specifically quarterbacks, that are going to change schools this year. And that is not going to be reflected in recruiting or in returning production, which creates the score that I use. And that's what makes it difficult. And we had a little bit of that this year. We're going to have a lot more of it next year. You know, some of the like most high profile transfers are quarterbacks. We think Caleb Williams is probably going to end up at USC with Lincoln Riley. That seems the way the wind is blowing right now. We'll see. It has not been official yet.
You don't think he's taking his $1 million to go to Eastern Michigan?
I don't think so, but in this era, very little would actually surprise me, to be honest, if you had, just because
it's a whole new world, man. It's a whole new
once
world.
Once the A&M operation got really documented, I could really understand the scope of what they had already put in place. And honestly, good job by them of seeing this coming and being ahead of it. So day one, they're the ones that are set up, organized to pay everybody. Like, that's how you get an, like, you want to beat Alabama, you want to beat Georgia, you want an edge over them. The way to get an edge over them is to pick something that maybe they don't have a great grasp of right now and be in first and be in ahead of them on it. You're not going to be in ahead of them on traditional recruiting. Everybody knows how that functions already. So being ahead on name, image, and likeness is a way that they could gain an advantage. It looks like they're going to gain an advantage. So transfer portal, how does that impact my ability to evaluate teams effectively because of returning production being affected? That'll be an interesting note going forward with so many quarterbacks changing schools. And obviously the Oklahoma quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler is going to South Carolina, are sort of at the top of that list, but not alone. I mean, a ton of really talented guys in the portal. And with that in mind, we can for sure go over some of the odds for next year.
Yeah. It's not going to surprise you who is at the top of the list. Do you want to take a guess?
For a champion or for Heisman?
Yes. Yeah, we'll start with your champion.
I wonder who'll be at the top of the list for champion.
Who,
like Alabama, followed by the other same five teams every single time.
It's really no team as well. I'd actually argue there might be a slight surprise. Alabama plus 150, of course, is the leader in the clubhouse right now.
Which is insanely prohibitive already for the national title winner. I mean, it just gives you an idea of like how have and have not some of this stuff is. Maybe how much they don't want to take a bet on Alabama.
this also just goes back to the fact that we're getting the same thing every year where you expect Alabama to always reload. And look, they're a school where when you have multiple receivers go out in a national championship game, they just dig into the well a little bit and bring up freshmen that are expected to be bigger contributors down the road. Like, there's always so much depth and so much talent with this program every year. You expect them to be in the spot every single year until, of course, Nick Saban actually retires. That's when it all ends. Ohio State comes in after that at plus 250, Georgia 5-1, and then Clemson actually behind them at 14-1, along with Oklahoma, who's also 14-1, Texas A&M 16-1, and then Notre Dame comes in a little bit farther behind that at plus 2,500.
Yeah, and it's worth noting, and this isn't true every season. Last year, it wasn't true. A lot of the schools that we're reading off at the top, I mentioned transfer portal, everyone's going places. I mean, Oklahoma's in that top five or six list, and obviously they, a lot of moving pieces involved in their coaching staff and their quarterback room and everything with them, but Alabama brings back their quarterback. Ohio State brings back their quarterback. Clemson brings back their quarterback. You might not think he's any good, but he's coming back. That's an interesting note because we had so much turnover quarterback wise. I mean, so entering last season, Alabama was replacing Mac Jones. Clemson was obviously replacing Trevor Lawrence with DJ Uiagalelei. Georgia was trying to decide what they were going to do, basically, and they ended up starting Stetson Bennett instead of JT Daniels for most of the season. So you had like all of the major programs, basically like completely in flux in terms of, you know, who they were going to start. Ohio State was going to start CJ Stroud instead of Justin Fields. So, you know, like everybody was replacing someone iconic. That's not really happening next year. So you would have thought this would have been the parody year. If there was going to be a parody year. Whoops.
No,
actually.
You're pretty much getting
the
exact same teams that you'd expect. Michigan all the way down, by the way. Michigan sitting there at 33-1 right now. So they're a little bit farther down with Oklahoma State and Oregon are all 33-1. Florida and USC. So USC, I'd expect those numbers to jump. If you have confidence that, you know, Lincoln Riley can do something in his first year, especially if Caleb Williams is considering transferring to USC.
Confidence in doing
that's
something.
The one right there. That's the long shot that I would look at now when you're looking at USC at 40-1 right now to win the national championship. If you're looking to try to find some value, I would jump on that now because, look, the expectations are they've already been getting some talent that you'll probably get more. And if Caleb Williams transfers over to USC on top of that and Lincoln Riley's able to turn that program around because he's not going to the USC. Out in the Pac-12, there's an opportunity for that school to be better a lot faster. And it's a glamour program, and he's the big splash that that program needed. So there's certainly a lot there, I think, where those odds tend to change very, very quickly. So that would be, I think that would be the one that stands out to me where I'm kind of looking at it going, there's at least some value there with where they stand right now.
Yeah, and if you just, I'm just looking at the top 15 to 20 prices right now, and just of these teams that I'm looking at, the teams that generally, forget returning production, forget coach, forget whatever, the teams that just recruit, just straight recruiting at a high enough level to even win or contend, it's, I mean, we can eliminate half the list, honestly, just based off of what we know about recruiting. So like Alabama, obviously, and Georgia recruited at a high enough level to win. Ohio State recruits at a high enough level to win. Now, Oklahoma fits all the parameters from a recruiting standpoint, but like haven't done it in a while, mostly because they've run into one of the teams that we talked about. But they do, they qualify. I mean, they're typically the best team in the Big 12 recruiting as long as they're still in the conference. Clemson recruits at a big enough level to win. They obviously have. A&M does. They just, we haven't seen the breakthrough yet because of the conference that they play in and everything hasn't materialized the way we want to. Notre Dame doesn't really. They actually never show up for me as a national. They show up as a playoff contender, but that's a different tier of accomplishment, honestly. As we've seen in the semifinals, there's a difference between making the playoff and a difference between winning a playoff game, and obviously a difference between that and winning a national title. Notre Dame doesn't really recruit at that high level. Michigan will sometimes. This year was a rarity. They don't always. What happens with Oregon? Everyone thinks they're still going to recruit well. Let's see. Oklahoma State definitely does not recruit at a high enough level to compete at this level. Utah, Wisconsin, Texas is kind of in and out sometimes. LSU 50 is just kind of interesting. Like, knowing nothing about the future of LSU football, you just see a team LSU 50, like they're a top five recruiting tool, like literally every single year. Is that going to change? Is their four-year average going to start dipping? That's interesting. And USC and Florida, the 240s that you mentioned. Yeah, I agree. USC is an interesting look for a couple different reasons. It looks like they're going to get Caleb Williams. If that happens, Jackson Dart, they're one of their quarterbacks they wanted to hang on to, entered the portal. People think that that portends for Williams going there now. That news kind of slipped out, and so that's why Dart's going to transfer. So if Williams goes there, they immediately become like the favorite to win the Pac-12 next year with Riley and the recruiting averages that they still have. And they're not great, but they're good enough. It'll be them in Oregon, and we'll see who kind of ends up returning for other teams. They're interesting because they have a path. Can they beat those teams? I don't know. That's kind of interesting. Florida eventually will be really interesting again. They recruited a high enough level to win titles. Billy Napier goes there. Obviously, a little bit of recovery project necessary after the Dan Mullen scorched earth situation ends up leaving the program. But like, should be fine. And it's so there are schools that are prices that are interesting, but there aren't many. I guess that's the point. Like, it's still a small group, and it would take a lot of transfers to probably create a larger group than what we're talking about.
Well, the one thing I am actually kind of hoping for with all of this NIL and then it's basically free agency without a salary cap. Maybe this does create a little more parity where it just comes down to boosters that have enough money that they get a guy to go and it becomes SMU without the
need a big quarterback. Just got to get a big quarterback to transfer or pay him a ton of money. Then you could, then absolutely. You get a big quarterback. Like, you can at least get to the playoff. I don't know if you can beat somebody there, but you can at least get there.
Right. Well, listen, it takes years to be able at all to build up a program like Georgia now has. Look how long it's taken them with Kirby Smart, just like you're trying to compete then with Alabama. All of that stuff takes such a long time. So I'm not saying it's going to happen in a year or two, but I think USC is certainly that school you'd think of that would be climbing up, but that's a big factor having Lincoln Riley there. But yeah, look, maybe there is that semi-positive in there where you can find some teams that can compete with the big heavy hitters in the SEC. So you may be thinking, hey, might be time for an NBA for me because, you know, college football's done. Brian Scalabrine going to help us look deep into the NBA as we move forward next. This is You Better You Bet on BetQL.
Hey, it's Quinn Mayo from BetMGM tonight, 7 to 11 Eastern. Download the free Odyssey app now to watch and listen to The Daily Tip, BetQL Daily, You Better You Bet, and BetMGM tonight on the BetQL Network.